the place where your dreams come
true. It is Brian's World.
So listen.
Coming at you.
Happy holidays from my world to yours. Thank you for making this year special by showering me with the gift of support. I'm Brian James, and welcome to Brian's World. Today's episode is the first of the Brian's World Christmas series. I'd like to introduce you to a very good friend of mine, a hero for her mental health work in the community. She shares her experiences of the pandemic from the view of a mental health professional and leaves us with tips to help make things better for each other during this dark time. She also shares the joys and challenges that she's faced on her journey and how she found herself along the way. Please welcome Brianna Danielle Finley, founder and CEO of the B Network. This year look like from the standpoint of someone who has to work in the mental health field? Like, how has this year been for you?
It's a very traumatic year. Mm-hmm. I don't think that many people understand that mental health professionals and are also first responders. Many people who work as professional counselors and even just social workers and the many different things that social workers, the roles that they play, social workers too, counselors too, still had to show up in office every single day. A lot of the places that we work include hospitals and outpatient clinics. And so you have, you know, hospital social workers or palliative care social workers who are the ones helping those family members who have just been told, you know, so-and-so has passed away from COVID. The same way that everyone else has to see that firsthand, you know, your mental health professionals are the ones who are looking at you to say, hey, your family member has died, now what? The consultations and the inquiries for therapy have skyrocketed. And I think for two reasons. One, a lot of people are home now and it's like, you know what? I have this time that I've never had before. I've always wanted to try therapy, so why not? And then on the flip side of that, you have, oh my gosh, this year has been so devastating. I need to talk to somebody right now.
With that being said, have you guys ever experienced like, hey, I can't take you right now. Like, I'm literally booked until forever. You know what I mean? Like, do you guys have the time? Like, have you had the time to deal with all of this?
It's almost impossible. So in addition to my private practice, I still work full time and I work in an outpatient clinic. And I can definitely say in that clinic setting, there is no space. And you know, people are still signing up for intakes and they're coming in to get those initial assessments done, but the therapists have no space on their schedules to take new clients. And you can't stop seeing them because, you know, in a week or two, you might have a client who stopped showing up or who missed, you know, two sessions in a row or what have you. But it's hard. There honestly is no space. In my private practice right now, we're booked to capacity.
Wow.
I have six clinicians working in my practice, not including myself, and every single person is full. It's a challenge.
Do you think that it's a challenge that, I won't say got ignored this year, but do you think that it's a challenge that isn't talked about or hasn't been talked about enough this year?
Oh yeah, no one has talked about that. One of my colleagues made a joke about it when we first, so even though I work for an outpatient clinic, I was placed in a school. And so we were at the school the last day where it was like, the kids aren't coming back anymore, you know, after today or whatever.
Yeah.
And one of my colleagues was also a social worker. She was like, you know, the world is really getting ready to find out just how valuable social workers are. And she said it jokingly, because a lot of times when you think of a social worker, most people are like, oh, you take people's kids. You know, like that's not even the half of it. Like social workers work in juvenile detention centers, jails, hospitals, clinics, schools. Like social workers are literally everywhere. And in every atmosphere, there's some kind of interventions going on, skill building, therapy, case management. Like no matter what, the social worker is looking to help the client, meeting them where they are. However, it is an underpaid field.
Yeah.
So when you take a pandemic like this and you take the influx of inquiries and the need to just come to work and be burned out, you know, from your regular full-time jobs and being for some, a lot of people being underpaid, like that toll, you know, there are no words for it. You know, someone has said to me before, like every therapist needs a therapist. But right now, who does even that therapist go to? Because everything that people are experiencing in the world, like as a therapist, we sit there and we have to listen and take those things in. And even when we don't think that things are impacting us, like the body really does keep the score.
Yeah.
Like your body really does hold on to people's stories of trauma and pain. And so you do start to see that, you know, in your everyday life, whether you just feel stress in your shoulders, you know, you can't sleep or whatever the case might be.
It's funny you went into that because I was getting ready to ask him, like, I could just imagine how much you guys are like holding in or like have to hold them because you don't have anywhere really to go. I mean, the people that you probably would go to are seeing other people as well right now, you know? So my thing is it has to be draining and on some degree, but what is it that keeps you coming back for more and continuing to serve us, which we're thankful for? What is it that keeps you running?
So, you know, and I'll be honest with you. So in full transparency, earlier this year, I did decide to take FMLA because I couldn't do it. My job was already stressful for other reasons. We were reaching, with my mom passing away last September, I've been going through a lot of my first.
Yeah.
So her birthday was April 30th. You know, Mother's Day was right after that. And yeah. It seemed like right after Mother's Day, like it was just too much. Now that we're doing telehealth, I'm literally looking at clients on Zoom who are crying, talking to me about losing family members. Many people talking about losing their mom. You know, my mother went through hospice. And so I actually watched my mother essentially deteriorate in less than 48 hours. And I've had a client tell me, you know, oh, on Father's Day, someone was shot, and describe to me everything that happened from the shooting to her watching that man die in her arms. And it got to the point where there was absolutely no way I could keep working and seeing clients. And so while part of you feels guilty for walking away from clients in need like that, we have to remember too that like there's absolutely no way that I can be of service to you. There's absolutely nothing that I can give to you if I'm really still trying to piece myself back together.
Right.
Especially, you know, when you're not talking to me like, oh yeah, you know, bad breakup. No, you really want to talk to me about death and dying while I'm also still navigating, you know, death and dying.
Right, right.
And so when I came back, I took 16 weeks off. I was still seeing private practice clients during that time, but I was very particular about the types of clients that I would see. And what makes it easier to come back is, you know, when you really do see clients who have their breakthroughs. Like oftentimes as clinicians, we wonder like, is what I said, did that really help the client? You know what I mean? Like that really means something to them. But there are people who will reach out to you on their own and tell you like how much that short period of time with you was or the kind of breakthroughs that they had. And that's what make you say, you know what? Okay, I can do this again. I can talk to the next person. I can pour back into the next person. But it is important, I think, for anybody in the helping field to recognize like when you've reached your max.
Yeah, I was going to say that's very courageous of you to admit that. You know, I think it takes a lot for you to be able to say, nah, I need to just take a second here and make sure I'm good. So when you, you know, first came back from all of that and you're still trying to process what's going on this year as well, what were some of the things that, like, what were some of your goals, like your personal goals for helping people, like helping this year with your clients?
The biggest thing that I always try to instill in my clients is, one, the idea of hope. There's always something to hope for.
Oh, I love that.
And also leaning into vulnerability.
Yes.
A lot of times we are so scared to be vulnerable, we're so scared to like really say what we feel, what's on our mind. But if this year has shown us anything, it shows just like just how fast people can leave us.
Yes.
So imagine having like the words, I love you, on the tip of your tongue for years and never even saying that to a sibling, right? And then all of a sudden you no longer have that chance or that opportunity. And a lot of times we don't express our emotions because vulnerability is hard for us. We don't want to feel rejected. We don't want to feel like I'm coming off too strong. Maybe you don't feel the same way. But then it hurts more to know that like I had all these things inside of me that I did not share. So leaning into vulnerability is a big one. And then that idea of hope is just kind of like, we've all lost something, whether it be a friend, a parent, a significant other, a job. And this idea of hope just says that like, I'm literally still here. There's a reason that I'm still here. There's something that I'm supposed to be doing. There's someone who I'm supposed to be encouraging along the way.
I love that.
And at some point, like I'm going to look up and I'm going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Everything might not be perfect, but I'm going to be okay.
I wonder if people were struggling to be vulnerable, or if you've seen this year, struggling to be vulnerable about, you know, just admitting that, you need help this time. We need help this time. Like, whether it's financial or just love of somebody that, you know, you're with, or a family member, like you said. Have you seen a lot of people this year that have struggled with that right there? Just admitting that things need some attention right now.
Definitely so. I mean, definitely so. Nobody wants to ask for help, especially, right, that strong friend. We all have one.
Yeah.
I am that one.
I was about to say, me too.
And we never want to ask for help. And sometimes you have to really, it usually takes something like awful, unfortunately, to happen for us to really be like, I can't do this. Whether it's physical help, you know, mental support, whatever it is, like, none of us can really do anything by ourselves. But I've definitely seen people struggle just to ask for help. No one wants to come across as like too weak. No one wants to come across as not being able. No one wants to come across as broke or not having something.
Yeah.
But it's okay to ask for help. I mean, even you got to think about it, you know, more people were able to apply for benefits from the state. And there were even some people who were refusing to do that. Like, their pride was like, no, I don't need that. I don't need food stamps. I don't need rental assistance. I don't do that. I don't apply for that. But I mean, you've been paying into your taxes. Yeah. It's there. Use it. And so that, sometimes that idea of asking for help is just so, so hard for people.
Do you have any tips for helping people to break through that vulnerability of just helping people to become more vulnerable, I should say, in being able to admit like what's really going on, like the reality of the current situation, and then to try to figure out a solution?
In all honesty, the best thing that you can do is to take a deep breath and ask for what you need. One thing that I share with my clients all the time is that you have to first start off by having that difficult conversation with yourself.
Yeah.
Have you admitted to yourself that you need help? Have you identified exactly what are the areas that you need help in? And if you're struggling there, then you already have to sit still with yourself, have some quiet time and figure it out, because there's no way that you can have difficult conversations with someone else if you don't know how to have difficult conversations with yourself.
Oh, that's powerful.
Then after that, it gets to a point where it's like, I am asking for help because it is a need that I have. I have a void that I need to be filled. You know, I need assistance. I need something. And if the only thing I can do is my part. And my part in this situation is to ask. Many times we are super afraid of how someone's going to respond.
Yep.
My thing is, don't prolong this idea of rejection. If someone is going to reject your request for help, you know, your expression of emotions, they're going to do it whether it's today or next month. And so it's better to figure that out now. If you reject me now, I can take that before I get my feelings more involved. I can take that before I get further in debt. You know what I mean? I need to take that now so that I now know how to deal with you. Sometimes rejection doesn't mean that I have to completely end a relationship or a friendship, but I might have to deal with you differently.
Yeah.
Or a person might also say, hey, I also don't have it. And maybe we can figure out ways to help and support each other. But it always takes for somebody to say something. But learning how to be okay with this idea of like rejection doesn't mean that there's something wrong with you. Rejection just means that you just picked up a little bit of a faster pace of figuring out who belongs in your life and who doesn't.
What do you say to people who are still, I guess, like still trying to get used to being okay with rejection?
It's a process. I think it's something that's hard for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
None of us wants, you know, for the things that we say to fall upon deaf ears. And so you have to always encourage yourself, practice affirmations, whatever the case might be for you. But one, figure out what it is that you need. Don't include any modifiers. Oh my goodness, I hate modifiers. So modifiers are those, I think, maybe, we should. No, be very direct about your request.
It's funny you said that. I've been like really focusing on that in the last couple of weeks.
Because modifiers leave room for suggestion.
Yeah, yeah.
Modifiers leave room for the other person to think I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
No, what I'm saying to you is, I need you to support me right now because I'm having a hard time. Mm. Not, oh, I think you should come over one day this week. Well, if I have something more important to do, then you told me I think.
Right.
You're not sure, I'm not sure. So I'm gonna go do the other thing. But if I'm a little more direct and say, hey, I'm really going through a rough time, I need you to kind of find some time this week to come over. What day works for you?
So it sounds like it's a list that people think is like super long, but on a rather like decently short list, mm-hmm. among the top things that we should be focusing on this year, is learning how to like actually communicate with each other, and I guess communicate with ourselves first, mm-hmm. and then learn how to communicate with each other. You agree with that?
I definitely agree with that. So many things can be avoided if we are just more direct with what our wants and needs are. We'll get the answers. There's no need to be going through anxiety because I can't figure out what you're thinking.
Yeah.
Ask. And yes, I get that that's easier said than done. That's easier said than done for me too.
Yeah, yeah, man. But you just gotta rip the Band-Aid off sometimes though.
Yep.
Sometimes yeah. I be having to say 1, 2, 3, I'ma say it and just say it. I just count down and just say it, you know?
What's the worst thing that could happen?
Right.
And that's the question that we have to start asking ourselves. What is the absolute worst thing that could happen?
Yeah.
And even if the answer to that question is, oh my gosh, they'll walk away or they'll walk out of my life forever. You want them to do that today or you want them to do that 3 years from now?
What is the biggest lesson you learned this year? I'll say professionally, like with you sitting at your desk across from, well, I guess across from a virtual client, what has this year taught you?
I think it's the same personal and professional, to be honest with you. I think the biggest lesson that I learned this year is like, it's okay not to be strong. It's okay for us to go through these whirlwind of emotions and they not go away in 2 days. It's okay for us to feel like, wow, like I'm hurting and it's been a couple of weeks. Like, it's okay. Because honestly, the only way that the body is going to be able to fully release those emotions is if you let them run its course. And when we try to push things down and push things out and try to speed things up, honestly, it's always going to come back up. It's running after us and you're going to feel it actually longer.
I can't help but wonder if, you know, this year, what's some of the things that we can do, just little things to kind of help each other out mentally?
The most important thing to do for each other, honestly, is to check in on each other. Mm-hmm. Actually ask somebody, how are you doing? And you also have to know your friends.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's one thing. I'm going to use a friend that we actually both know of.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm ready.
Darcy knows me well enough, right? Yeah. That I'm the strong friend. And so a lot of times people would say, when my mom first passed away, a lot of times people would say, do you need anything? I'm like, no, I'm fine. And that's because I really wanted to be alone. And so for Darcy, it was, okay, I know Brianna's going to say no. If I ask her, do you need anything? I know she's going to say no. So you start to shift that to what is it that I know that my friend might be missing or lacking, right? Mm. And so Darcy would shift her questions to, what do you want to eat today?
Yeah. See, that's love to me. I love that. That's love.
Because even if I say nothing, she still want to counter that with, okay, well, that's not an option. So pick it up. But you know what I mean? But it still gives you a lot more direction than do you need anything?
Or I can see her just popping up on you with some food.
Yeah. I mean, and do that too, because sometimes when we are so overwhelmed with trauma and pain and anxiety, for somebody to say, do you need anything? Anything? That's a lot to tackle.
Yeah.
Anything? That's a huge word. I mean, do I need water? Do I need my house clean? Do I need gas? Do I need food? Do I need sleep? Like, I can't even begin to knock that mountain down to answer your question. Mm. So the best thing for me to say is, nope, I don't need nothing.
For some of us, because I'm the same way. You know, you ask me if I need anything, I'm gonna be like, nah, I'm cool. Unless I really, 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 really need something. But for some of us, it kind of feels like that question may cause anxiety. Would you agree with that?
It definitely causes anxiety. Like, and my therapist even tried to help me with that. She was like, start to think of things specific, because you even asked me at one point, do you need anything?
Yeah.
And I'm trying to practice what I'm being told. And I thought about it. Do you not leave in the house? So what do you need? And I said, water. And you brought me
a
case of water.
Yeah.
So you really never know like how you can get something, whether it's big or small, that could just really help somebody out.
I've never looked at how anxiety ridden that question is. I've never, like, I don't even want to ask nobody that no more. I just want to be like, all right, this is such and such, bam, I know they like this, I'm gonna just pop up on them and just, you know, do that.
It's important to ask, but you gotta know who you're talking to.
Yeah.
Right? You gotta know who you're talking to, or you have to know a little bit about what they're going through.
Yeah.
But to say, do you need anything, that's a loaded question. And when you start, or even if you do ask the question, if you start hitting a wall and the answer keeps being no, you gotta ask yourself, is that answer really no?
Like, am I making this up? Am I making this worse? Yeah.
And at that point, you gotta push yourself to be a little more specific.
I just want us to be a little warmer. Like, I feel like sometimes we forget that everybody is, like, I'm a people watcher. And, you know, I just be looking outside, just like, wow, that person could be going through X, Y, and Z. That person could be going through a whole different thing and blah, blah, blah. And I think sometimes we forget how far just being warm can go. You know what I mean? So, you know, I hope those tips are able to help somebody. I did, you know, I told you earlier how proud of you I was, and am and continue to be, for everything that you, have gotten accomplished. One of those things is, getting your own practice, expanding your practice. Before we talk about the decisions that led to, you know, getting that going, I want to talk about the voice that called you into what you do. What was that moment, that you just knew that, you know, mental health, psychotherapy and all that was your lane?
I want to say, I think back in middle school is when I first knew I want to help people. I didn't know what that looked like, but I knew everybody came to me, right? Something about that, once we got to applying to schools for undergrad and declaring a major, I literally always try to go around it because I don't know. Part of me was like, am I going to do well there? Am I going to make money? Is that a real job? But no matter how many times I flip-flopped with my major or my minor at Salisbury, somehow I ended up back, you know, to psychology, social work. And I had a professor in my abnormal psych class, and she said, I don't know. She said, but something tells me, like, you're not meant to be a psych major. And I was like, what? Like, almost like took it a little offensively. Hmm. And she said, no, I really think that you should look into social work. And I said, okay. And I looked into it. I started with the major and I loved it. And like, that has literally been my life ever since. And even when studying social work, I never wanted to work with children. But once I, you know, graduated with my master's, got my license and came home, child welfare is where the jobs was at. And for the most part, the majority of my career, at least 80% of my career, has been in child welfare or child, you know, child development. And so, yeah, it's just crazy how life pulls us.
Yeah, right? Like, it's like your purpose gonna get your attention. My mom says that. She's been saying that since I was like a little kid. Just you keep running, your purpose gonna find you. And that, I think that's true, you know, because, you know, look at what you're doing now. You know, look at how things have snowballed into where you are now, managing your own practice. Now, what was those moments like before you decided? Because that's a big jump. You know, you did a big thing. I don't know if you already patted yourself on the back or if you already had like a speech in the mirror saying, go girl, congratulations, but you deserve it because you did a big thing. You know, what were those moments like before you made that leap?
They were me being a friend. So you're going to laugh when I say, so I still have not had the speech in the mirror.
Wow.
My therapist has gotten on me heavily about it. She was like, your confidence is just, she was like, it's there, but it's so quiet. And because literally I was working with her, my newer therapist, for at least 4 or 5 months before I ever was like, oh yeah, I have a private practice. And she's like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I got this many employees, this many. And she's like, huh? And that just never comes up.
Yeah, like, I saw the list. I was like, yeah, shorty got a whole hospital. Like, for real, you know what I mean? And that's dope.
So honestly and truly, it started with me helping a friend.
Okay.
So in order for you to be able to take and bill insurances for therapy, you have to be credentialed and paneled.
Right.
And so my friend didn't know how to do it. She wasn't in a place where she was ready to pay someone to do it. And I was like, I can help you, but it's got to be through like a trial and error type thing. And so I was like, I can't show you something unless I kind of walk through it.
Yeah.
And not wanting to mess up her application, right? I said, I'll just apply because I don't want to do this anyway. So I'll just apply. And if we mess up, you know, it's my stuff or whatever. Maybe like 2 months later, my test run was approved and I became credentialed for Aetna.
Wow.
And I was like, okay. And so for me, because I love a plan. So for me, I was like, you know what? Maybe I can work this out. This was last year. I was like, maybe I can work this out. I'm going to make a plan to credential for some other insurance companies and catch this BJ. I said, I'm going to start my private practice in August. I said I was going to start my private practice in August of 2020.
Come on, birthday month.
And so I know, but just wait for it. So I'm gonna try to make it through the story as best as I can. Okay.
Take your time.
It was the end of April where I literally, for whatever reason, felt God tell me to do it now. And that was really weird for me because also during that time last year, I was really focused on trying to figure out like, how do I personally hear God's voice? Mm-hmm. And with me trying to navigate and figure that out, I felt like I heard God say, start your practice now. I took my first private practice client, I want to say in like May 11th or something like that. I started building up a part-time practice that I would do on the weekends and after my full-time job. Then the end of July was when my mom first realized that something wasn't right. Mm. And so she had surgery at the end of July, and it was in August that my mom was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer.
Wow.
And I say that to say, if I would have followed Brianna's plan of I'm going to start in August, or that do it now that I got from God at the end of April, it probably would have never happened. Mm. Because once August came, my attention for the next 3 weeks was going to doctor's appointments, trying to set things up. I mean, things with my mom happened super duper fast. My mom was diagnosed on August 20th and she passed away on September 20th.
Wow.
There is no way possible that I would have had a practice.
Yeah.
And so once that happened, I kind of put things on pause. I networked with someone who ended, because I was doing everything myself, my own billing, all of that. So I just asked her, I did like a, we didn't do a contract because it was like a one-time thing.
Yeah.
Kind of made sure that she closed out all my books for the year, and I took a break. I mean, I didn't have a choice.
Yeah, you needed it. You needed it.
So I picked back up in January. I was only seeing about 11 or 13 clients in January, and I was fine. I was comfortable. I was like, I don't want to pick up to the number that I was at anymore. I'm just going to keep moving like this. And I randomly, I always say semi because it wasn't that big, but I kind of semi went viral on Twitter.
Uh-oh.
Again in April. Maybe like a week before I went viral, I had a friend said, hey, are you looking to hire? Because I really want to get into therapy. And I was like, oh, not really. But I mean, we could work something out. Maybe start you off with one or two clients, right? Mm-hmm. When I went viral, I woke up with over 80 consultation requests.
Wow. Tell me about the viral moment. Like what's up?
Someone had tweeted that, she tweeted something along the lines of, everyone say that there's no black therapists, but there are. They just want us to pay out of pocket. They don't take insurance. And so I responded and I was like, hi, my name is Brianna. I own the B Network. And I listed the 4 different insurances that I take. I had so many retweets and likes. And like I said, I actually had about 82 people who clicked on that website link and took the next step. And so I was like, what the heck am I going to do? Right? Like, I can't do this. So I was able to hire 2 people immediately. So between us 3, we were able to knock that list down and just let it, you know, we were good.
Yeah.
And so the girl who I was just getting to help me, I was like, I'm going to have to bring you on. I said, there's no way that I can keep billing by myself. And one day she said to me, Brianna, there are a lot of therapists who are struggling with the pandemic and navigating the change, going to telehealth. You know, a lot of people weren't familiar with telehealth.
Yeah.
She was like, you're doing it well. She was like, and your inquiries are not slowing down. And she was like, why don't you want to continue to expand? And I was like, girl, bye. Like, I don't have time for that. Work already stressing me out. Woo, woo, woo. And she's like, but that's the point of having a team. So she pushed me to do that. And so be mindful, in the midst of this, I was going through listening to those calls at my full-time job, you know what I mean? Of people like giving very vivid stories of people dying in their lives. I was having stress at my job, which with what I felt was like workplace harassment and retaliation. I was going through all of those things, but she was like, let's do it. She was like, I got you on the billing side. I got you on initial contacts and things like that. And honestly, it wasn't until I was out of like my own stint of depression this summer that I realized that she's telling me, like, I think this is your time, and me literally trusting her to help me through that, I don't think that I would be where I'm at. Literally during that time, those whole 16 weeks I wasn't working, I was not running my business. She was.
And you were like, kind of recharging your batteries at this
point. Yeah. Gotcha. Like, now that I'm on the other side of, like, you know, going through my own grief process, I'm like, Brianna, all you were doing was going in there, approving notes, and running payroll. Mm. Like, I went from seeing 13 plus patients to seeing 6.
Wow.
And we right now have upwards of 100 clients, and I still see like 8.
that's a good clientele, though.
It is. But like, when I say my practice runs so smoothly, so from the time that I, you know, was doing it on my own, I had to stop. I picked back up. I hired her. We have not run into literally not a single bump or glitch. And so for me, I'm like, that's only God.
Yeah.
Because this was never in like the Brianna's plan, the control world plan for me.
But how does it make you feel to just kind of see things go?
I mean, it's amazing. I mean, it's definitely amazing to see like just how many people we can help. Like, how, you know, I did something that just kind of like caught like wildfire, that was able to give other clinicians an opportunity. I even have two interns now, and people were struggling to find internships because a lot of places couldn't navigate telehealth themselves, let alone bring a, you know, bring a therapist in.
Yeah.
So it, I mean, it is exciting to know that I'm able to provide something that feels good for people. Because, you know, one of the things that's hard about therapy for people is like finding someone that looks like them. And we all know that there are sources out there like Therapy for Black Girls and things like that, where you can find someone who looks like you. But aside from that, how comfortable can this person make you feel now that we're not face to face? And so a lot of the feedback that we get from clients a lot of times really just talks about how comfortable they are.
Like you said, that's literally, I would say that's more than half the battle with therapy.
Yeah. Right? I gotta be able to connect with you.
Straight up.
Comfort is definitely always a goal for me. Because my thing is that, like, a lot of times, again, that vulnerability piece, right?
Yeah.
Even if I know I'm going to go meet somebody who's supposed to help me with my problems, how do I know you're not judging me? And so because of that, we start to even give therapists just pieces of ourselves. And then we're giving them pieces. They're trying to help the piece, right? And then we're going back in our car on the way home trying to figure out, how do I make the little piece that they gave me really fit my reality? We're not getting real help because somebody's out here fixing half a truth or a lie.
Yeah.
So to be able to have real human connections with people, to build rapport, allows for people to truly give you parts of them that need healing. Building rapport is more than half the battle.
Yeah.
When we have rapport, not only are you going to share with me, but you trust me to help give you the tools to propel further in your own life. Therapy isn't about giving advice. It's just not.
It's about, right, but trust. It's about
giving you, yep, it's about trust. It's about giving you tools and helping you to process those things. And you are not going to do any of that if you don't trust me. One review that we got was like, so-and-so therapist, like, I really feel like that's my girlfriend. She lets me curse. She lets me cry. She really just lets me get it all out. And then she still comforts me and checks me all at the same time. And the thing is, you know, as a people, we don't need cookie cutter help.
Need something real. Need something honest. Real. And trustworthy.
So able to give people that, yep. And I always tell my clients, like, it's six of us. Well, seven if we count me. But it's seven of us in this practice. If I don't work for you, tell me that. You're not going to hurt my feelings.
Yeah. That's why you have a whole team.
And even if they don't work for you, I will help you find somebody else. Because the goal is for you to get better. And you can only get better when you find somebody that you connect with. Mm. So a message for people is, like, never be scared to fire a therapist. Ever. It's not about them.
I know you said that it's been a smooth journey with the team, which is a blessing. I can only imagine that, you know, they look at you as and, you know, in the leadership role, and I wonder, has it been any difficulties with you, like inside, or just things that you were I won't say worried about, but just maybe concerned about this year and in leading, you know, your team through all of this. With what we've been experiencing in recent months?
No, my team is actually really great. My team, and I think that's something about helping professionals, we want to help everybody. And so my team is also constantly checking in on me. Mm. Are you okay? Did you take a day off? You know what I mean? Like, as much as I check in on them, they check in on me. And so we literally grow together as a team. Any kind of feedback is constructive. Like, people make mistakes, but that's how you grow. And so now that I've had this opportunity, one of my biggest goals as far as running a practice goes is to really help to grow and develop future social workers. Mm. You know, in the beginning, I told you that a lot of times people are like, oh, you're a social worker, so you take people's kids, right? There are a lot of people who go into the field who start to embody that, who start to feel like, what can I really do in this profession? Is this for me? Like, do I have anything to value, or do I all of a sudden become a psychologist or a psychiatrist? And if that's what you really want to do, great. But I really love being able to show people like their superpowers as a social worker.
Yeah. Yeah. What's some of the ways that you've been paying it forward in, you know, in that regard?
So I do provide, clinical supervision to them for free, in order for them to get their advanced licensure. A lot of people ask to meet with me on like, how did you start your business, and really helping them to get through building and starting up their own private practices. And I'm not a person who sits on my blessings and does not want to share.
Yeah.
So I'm an open book.
I love that.
I didn't get it by myself, yeah. Right? So there's nothing wrong with sharing, and really that mentorship. Like, I'm sincerely always available.
I'm a fan. I love it. I think it's dope what you're doing. I think it's dope how it continues to grow And no matter how big it gets, no matter how much it grows, you know, you still do things organic and naturally. You ain't never switched up on nobody. You know what I mean?
And that's the hard part.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine. I can imagine because so many people don't do that. Like, you know, so what you're really doing out here is you really are being a blessing to not just the public, but you're also being a blessing to the staff, the people that you know, work under you and believe in you. So, you know, I definitely give you kudos and take my hat off to you. And I wish you the best, everything going forward. I would love for you to plug your website and your Instagram and anything else that, you know, you need for people to know, in case they're looking for a place to go.
Well, thank you. So again, my name is Brianna Danielle Finley.
Yep.
I am the clinical director and founder of the B Network. So the B Network is a fully virtual mental health practice. It is staffed by all African-American female social workers and licensed professional counselors. Currently, unfortunately, we are not accepting new clients for individuals. We do have a small wait list going, but what we are doing right now is accepting children for free group therapy. So one way that we were paying it forward is I was doing a campaign this December where I was raising money so that we'll be able to provide free group therapy for children ages 5 through 14.
Oh, yes.
In February, we're going to be starting a postpartum group for women. So if you are interested, you can find us at www.thebnetwork.org. And that is B spelled B-E-E. And then you can also find us on Instagram at thebnetwork with one underscore.
Okay, and you said you have some insurances that you take, right? I think you said four?
Yeah, so we take Aetna, Cigna, mm-hmm. All Blue Cross / Care First Plan. Because you know it's a bunch of them.
Yeah, I was about to say, it sounded like they difficult. They got everybody.
and United Healthcare.
Okay, awesome. Well, yeah, congratulations to you on everything. I'm proud of you for taking care of your own story too. Like, just, you know, I know you've been dealing with a lot yourself, you know, and it's good to see you flexing on them and doing what you need to do. And I'm really happy for you. I'm proud of you, and I wish you nothing but the best.
I appreciate that. Thank you so very much.
Get more from BriansWorldLive.com. Connect with the Brian's World family at Brian's World Live on Instagram.
Don't go nowhere. I'm coming to see you. And y'all don't want no problems.
It's Brian's World Live.